You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
Welcome back to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 4, and today we're going to be talking about the movie Mommy Dearest. And if you have not seen it, I highly recommend it. It's an older film. I know it's not a horror movie, but it is an absolute classic, even if you're not gay. Robbie is going to be joining us again. We're going to be talking about that film. And the coolest aspect is I actually have a piece of wardrobe worn by Faye Dunaway as she played Joan Crawford in the film. If you don't already do so, please follow us on social media because we are on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Lots of extras on those. And a lot of our time now is being occupied by making videos on those different social media platforms. So please check it out because it is a lot of fun. In the meantime, let's go in and start talking about the great movie, Mommy Dearest. So coming back on the podcast, as we talk about a movie that I have a piece of wardrobe from, it's actually not a horror movie this week. We're going to be talking about Mommy Dearest. So welcome back to the podcast, Robbie. How are you?
I am doing quite well. How about yourself?
I'm good. So have you watched some of the new videos that we've been doing?
Yes, I have.
I don't look quite as moist in these ones because the air conditioner worked.
Which is crazy. So good for you for stepping that up. So yeah, I'm proud of you.
What are your thoughts on those new videos?
Still uncomfortable.
Really?
Still, your wife as you're leaving the house. I get nervous and I get uncomfortable for everybody that's watching. I don't know what it is, but yeah, that was you hit the nail on the nose.
What a weird character, right?
It's so good though. It's it causes feelings in me that make me cringy. Yeah.
Well, people ask me, you know, like, who is this character? Who's it based on? Like, it had to be somebody that you worked with at the prison. And I've got to tell you, it is a combination of personalities based on the sketch, things that were said through the years from different supervisors that were all, not all my supervisors were morons, but there was just some that, god damn, like, I just don't know how they ever got to be an adult, like how they stayed alive. Just really stupid people, some of them. So a lot of inspiration.
Glad that y'all are listening.
This would be below them to listen to this podcast. They would never listen to it. Because I think that for certain ones that were fairly religious, they're not going to listen to this podcast. They're just not. There's some real characters, and God bless you, you guys. You may not even realize that you're a huge inspiration, and I thank you. So
that was as sentimental as it gets. So
exactly. we've been jumping in, we've been doing the videos, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's great. We've got one that's going to be coming up next week for Cinco de Mayo that you will see on our Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and Twitter pages. And keep watching those videos. I think you're going to get a chuckle. Well, I know you will. I know that you'll be able to laugh. Did you like the one, The Tools of the Trade?
Yes.
The one thing that I have one at home and I've got one at work. Robbie, most of that's ad-libbed.
Are you really?
Yes.
Holy shit. Yes. That's impressive. That's pretty impressive, actually.
So it takes a couple of Modellos to get into character, but then I loosen up. At least my lips become loose. What's insinuated, something else is loose if I'm using a fist.
God, and it's...
Well, the first
caress it down his chest. It was...
the first time we did it, I caressed his chin, and he couldn't keep a straight face. He was laughing. It was great. It was fun. It was great.
My God. God bless his heart. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's great. I've known Matt and his wife for years now, and they enjoy getting involved with the videos. So I hope they keep coming back and getting involved more. So it's fun. But today,
that's awesome.
Today we're talking about a very iconic film that's very popular, I think, for a lot of gay men. Mommy Dearest with Faye Dunaway. What an amazing show. I've loved this movie for years, and I remember watching it at Broovies on Mother's Day with a whole lot of gay guys, and we were having vodka cranberries, and a lot of people brought wire hangers to the theater and held them up during the infamous scene.
Were the wire hangers used in all of the fellatio that was going on? With a whole bunch of gay men in a theater together?
No,
with the lights off?
There was no fellatio. There was nothing kinky. There was no abortions going on. They were just holding it up in reference to Joan and no more wire hangers when she was screaming at Tina. And a lot of the gays brought wire hangers to pay tribute to Joan Crawford in that scene. And it was really amazing. It was fun.
And like more of just a like an interactive like Rocky Horror Picture Show
kind
of thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was great on Mother's Day. I mean, could you be any more politically correct? Politically incorrect.
Correct. There you go. There you go. I knew where you were going with that though.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I didn't know that they even did that at Broovies, which makes it that much better. So that's incredible. That's awesome. That's fun.
It was a very. I don't know if they still do it every year. But at least that year that I went, it was a lot of fun. It was really cool. Great idea. This movie is based on the book written by Christina about, because she was adopted by Joan. Mm-hmm. And they made this movie, Mommy Dearest, based on her book about the abuse that she was subjected to. So you would think it'd be very, very serious. You know, child abuse, how psychotic that she claimed that Joan Crawford was to her growing up. It was not very well received in the theaters, but now it's become this like classic. And, you know, a lot of gay guys that do drag, they like to pay tribute to Joan Crawford. She's one of those black and white movie stars that is often referenced by gay people. In fact, I was watching RuPaul's Drag Race, the newest season, and at one point, RuPaul made reference to, "I'm not mad at you, I'm mad at the dirt." And that's in that opening scene where she moves that big
vase.
Yeah, and there was the ring of dirt that the cleaning lady missed, and she goes off. And so when RuPaul Charles made reference to that during RuPaul's Drag Race, I loved it because it's little references like that in pop culture, RuPaul's Drag Race, etc., that, you know, just make me chuckle because it's a brilliant line, and it just, Joan Crawford, the way it was played by Faye Dunaway, so over the top. It's a great film.
I think it is incredible. I just coming from a standpoint of how a movie makes you feel so much sympathy and sadness for Christina. And what's funny is that you said it's not a horror movie, but I think it would be a horror movie to like adopted kids. Like that would be, you'd hope to God to not be put into a household like that, which anybody that you were told, like, you know, you think you're going to have some kind of life with a actress and a very affluent actress, very popular. And then come to find out you kind of peek behind the curtain and it's just an absolute fucking nightmare. It's a shit show. But the acting, it is over the top, but I think in the best way, because I feel like it depicts somebody that is and of course I'm not a doctor by any means, as everybody knows, but I would say that Joan Crawford's character, like, that's like bipolar, like that is some serious shit. And there are people that live with that and experience that, and they are dating someone or married to someone like that, or grew up and had that person in their life that acted like that. And so it felt like you could never, you always had to have your head on a pedestal and you could never relax. You always had to be ready for an episode or a situation that would flare up. And it was just fucking terrible. And to not only make matters worse, like, as a child, you can't get in a car and drive away or whatever. You are at the hand of someone where they provide for you. That's your mother. Like, it was terrifying. It's scary to think that at any moment she could go fucking bananas and you don't know what to expect. It was just,
I think about what you just said, and you talk about, like, celebrities and the whole idea of, do you know who I am? Like, how fucking dare you? And you hear this come up with different celebrities through the years, whether they get stopped by law enforcement or questioned about going into a club and they don't pull back the rope to let them in. It's like, do you know who I am? And they start to throw that status thing around in people's face. And of course, Joan Crawford, she had that status. I mean, she was the top of her game. And I guess she was contracted with MGM Studios. But you see all these different scenes throughout this movie where people, like, trigger her or question her or do not jump up when she's, you know, tells them to, and she gets triggered really, really fast.
I was about to say, it is, I know it sounds terrible. It's just the fact that somebody can go from hot to cold at the drop of a hat, but that's terrifying. But her face, and again, this is the acting part, the eyes would get ginormous, her voice would become all, like, wobbly, like wave, like kind of like watching a volcano erupt. Like, you knew it was coming and you couldn't run, you couldn't hide, you just had to suffer through it. And Jesus Christ, did it make me feel, if you haven't seen the film, watch it. Because spoilers, it's fucking so, right? So
it's so good, though. It's so good.
The scene when she comes to the house and she's an adult, Christina, and Joan Crawford tackles her into the coffee table.
Yes.
I was so caught off guard because I thought, she's a fucking woman now. Christina's a woman now. She's going to stand her ground. I'm going to take back what's mine. Again, even at her age, Joan Crawford launches herself at Christina to strangle the fucking shit out of her.
How dare you?
And then goes straight through the glass table and it shatters. Fuck, man. Like, even there's two guys there. I want to say, like, one of them was her agent. Oh, I can't remember what. They were trying to get her off of her. And it just doesn't stop. It never stops. You can't get away from it. It was like, Jesus Christ.
Well, you know, there was, it seemed like up until that point in the movie, she could control herself if there was too many witnesses.
Yeah.
And at that point, when Christina challenged her in front of those other people and she totally lost it, and it became so obvious that Joan has lost her fucking mind. Literally, we could watch this movie and sit there and talk about all these scenes because there is so many different elements. She is really sadistic towards Christina. Like, there's points where she really resents the little girl, which is crazy. The whole scene in the swimming pool where she challenges Christine and then will not let her win, even though she's an adult and the little girl's a little girl. I know a lot of people would say, well, you know, that's a lesson that the kid needs to learn. But at the same time, it seemed like Joan Crawford seemed to really relish the moment of rubbing it in Christina's face that she fucking lost.
I completely agree. And in the sense that there's a child would understand, like, you're an adult and I'm a child. Of course you did better than me. Of course you're going to win, or the odds are definitely in your favor. But from that point on, you can take two roads. You could take the road of, like, yeah, but you'll get there. And but you did a really good job. I'm gonna give you credit where credit's due. No, or you could take the other fucking road, which is a psychopath one, and be like, well, I'm just fucking better than you. You'll never be better than me, and you're just basically a piece of shit, and you know where you stand now. But she said it in different words, but it was basically that same kind of concept or that same situation.
Yeah.
Christina, when she's in the pool, and she's like, but it's not fair. And Joan Crawford, she has this smug smirk on her face that just is, it's evil. It's evil. It is so hateful. Even if you're literally putting a child down and the process, it's a win for her. It's still a success that she bested someone, even though it was it's her fucking daughter, and she's goddamn, you know, 3 months old in the pool, basically. She still bested her, and it made her feel that much bigger. And that's terrible. That's so sick.
That's
fucking insane.
I have not read the book, Mommy Dearest, that Christine did. Have you read the book?
Back, front to back cover.
You have?
No, not at all. Uh-uh. I don't know how to read.
Okay, so you're essentially fucking worthless. I do got to say that I want to go back and I want to read the book and I want to hear the details about what happened to Christina during the period that she was a child. And of course, a lot of this movie is based on.
I did hear that the movie is a lot more tame than the book, that they left a lot out that shows just how much abuse was going on. Mental, physical, emotional, literally a laundry list of, let me give you the most amount of trauma a person could possibly have in their life.
God, so sick. What'd you think of the Christmas and all the gifts? And, you know, you can pick out the gift that you want to keep, but everything else will be donated to charity. I just was like, could you be any more fucking cruel to a kid?
It's fucking cruel as shit. It's so wrong. It's so wrong to sweep the fucking rug out from under somebody's feet, and somebody so innocent and somebody that is only wanting the best and trying to do the best, and you continually, they cannot get ahead to save their goddamn life. But I can see one thing where if a parent were to be like, hey, there's a difference between, again, like, here's 20 gifts. You get to pick out 10 of them, but the other 10, we are going to go and we're going to give it. We're going to visit these places and we're going to do our part for the less fortunate, and, you know, to show that we care and to show that these other kids or these families are less fortunate or in a shittier time in their life. But again, there's two ways of going about it. And she goes about it the worst fucking way possible. The hits don't stop when it comes to between her and Christina.
No, she will not relent at all. She will not give that kid a break. And it's like, damn, man, I'm surprised that Christina did not become a serial killer. How does somebody take that much abuse and seriously turn out to be normal? It's so sad, really. One of the first scenes where she is challenged, when Joan Crawford is challenged, when she is not an acceptable applicant for adoption and she's turned away, and she snatches that folder out of that woman's hands.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah. Okay. So initially she is turned down. She's not a good applicant. She's been divorced. She's not a suitable candidate to have to adopt a child. And there is this scene between her and the person over the adoption agency. And she's like going over the folder saying, you know, we don't feel like you're an acceptable person. And, you know, like you said, the eyes start to open up and she reaches and she snatches that folder right out of that woman's hands, you know, with the whole idea of how fucking dare you. And
okay. Yes. 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 Yes, you're right.
Yeah, and as the movie progresses, you're like, God damn, was this woman really that sick? And, you know, because she's a movie star, does she get away with it? You know, time and time again, and she's abused, and, you know, Christina, and then of course the little boy, you know, who got adopted later. But it's like, I definitely need to read the book for that. Was the start of this movie, this motion picture. there's so many scenes. As we started talking today, you had put your screen name as, you know, Tina, get me the axe, which is one of my favorite scenes, probably my favorite scene in this movie.
Really?
And, yes. In Utah, I had a black and white picture of Joan Crawford with an axe hanging in my garage.
Wow.
That's
pretty gay. track
lighting gay.
I knew the poster was under a spotlight, and I just didn't know where the spotlight is coming from. But that's fuck, man. You're right. You're honestly right. The scenes, all of the scenes, I feel like are iconic, and they're iconic for the worst goddamn way. Is these episodes that she has that are just. Fuck, man, I don't even know how to say it. It is just wild. It's fucking wild. Because you, if somebody were to do that, probably once, and again, like you said, I don't know how Christina, like, she handled it. Because I would be like, you know what? Death is worse than putting up with this every day. Like, living every day in a hell that you just, you'll never win, you'll never be good enough, you'll never succeed, and you'll always be reminded of how terrible and how insignificant you are. And in this scene, when she's cutting down, is it in a rose bush?
It was the whole garden, because she got fired by MGM.
Yes.
And so she didn't handle it well.
Because she had like the clippers, but then she ended up going, when she said, yeah, she said, Tina, bring me the axe. And so it was... God bless. The little girl that portrayed Tina, or Christina, is so good.
Yeah.
So fucking good. And her eyes are of, like, uncertainty. Is she going to... I feel like I'm looking... Like, I'm watching the movie right now, and I remember feeling this feeling of her, of Christina, feeling, is she going to use this axe on me?
Yeah.
That's what it was like. And you saw it in her eyes. You saw it. You felt it in the emotion, and you couldn't blame her, because I would have... My mind would have went there as well.
The little girl that played the young Christina, she's actually had a pretty good career as a result of that movie. Mara Hobel is the young Tina, or Christina from Mommy Dearest. And she's been in a lot of films. Yeah. Blue Bloods, True Story. I guess television and movies. Law and Order, Kinsey, The Jury, Third Watch, Personal Velocity. So she's stayed pretty active through the years. I mean, it doesn't look like she's working every year. There's been some, well, there's a pretty big break between 2008 and 2015, and then 2015 to 2019. But she's still active as an actress. She's probably doing some stage work as well.
Good for her. Shit. After that, I feel like you would have to have some. Well, I mean, just her acting chops alone in that film, they were incredible. Like, I mean, there's a lot of kids nowadays that play amazing roles, and, you know, sometimes they use knives to slice Achilles' heels and be fucking evil children for the rest of their life.
Your favorite.
Fucking terrible. But with her acting chops in that movie, it was just like child prodigy, like, status. It was so uncomfortable because you were watching a child being abused. And you felt for her. And you felt like you would want to rescue her if you knew something was happening to a child like that and you're in real life. There's no fucking way, but it was all hidden. It was all kept away from the public eye. That girl, God bless that actress's heart. She did an amazing job when she was, whatever she was at the time that she filmed that.
What were your thoughts when she got fired from MGM? When Joan got fired from the studio? So he calls her in and basically tells her that she's like Hollywood royalty. And then tells her, like, that your last few movies have been all bombs, so we're letting you go. It really hit Joan's ego.
Is that the boardroom scene?
That's where she took over for Pepsi.
Okay. I don't know if I fully remember that one.
LB Mayer from MGM brings her in and tells her, like, look, we're letting you go. your last few movies have bombed. You know, go get with another studio. You probably got another one or two movies still that you could do that would be really good.
Shit.
And she starts pleading like, no, it's the directors, it's the scripts. Like, you know, I'm a leading person. You know, I can do this. And he already made up his mind. She was done. And they were already cleaning out all her stuff. And then she asked him to take her out. And he just stood there and looked at her.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm getting the flashbacks now because it's so uncomfortable. It's so weird to see her as such a, I was going to say like a boss ass bitch, but no, she's just a bitch. So just to see her be so solid and kind of scary and intimidating, and then at some point she's groveling and then maintain decorum.
Yes.
But at the same time, she is fuming. She is embarrassed, and I remember thinking, oh God, she's gonna go home and take it out on Christine. And she's just needing that private time to actually react the way she wanted to react in front of him, or at that moment, at least.
What happened was, is once she did get fired, that's when she went home and she started cutting down all the rose bushes, and then, you know, Tina get me the axe and starts cutting down the tree. But, and she actually wasn't, she was pretty nice to Christina at that point. She was mad at the studio guy, LB Mayer. She was pissed. But, you know, again, this ego, how those personalities react to being brought down a notch or two, saying, hey, look, no offense, you've been wonderful, but it is a business and you're not making us money. So time for you to move on.
It's a business. Like that's what it is. I feel like she felt as though it didn't apply to her. She was beyond that.
Absolutely. She felt like she had done so many movies and done so well that she gets a pass. And no, you don't. We need to make money and your movies are bombing. Your shelf life is done.
That's one way to put it. Jesus. I was like, God damn. Like, you being an executive and be like, your shelf life is up. You're fired.
That's what it boils down to, though. I mean, how many people actually are of a level of an actor, like an A-lister, like, say, Tom Cruise? Not that I'm a fan, but, you know, there are very few Tom Cruises that will always fill the theater. Harrison Ford, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And Joan Crawford was not of that status. She thought she was.
God damn. It was beyond humbling for her. It was embarrassing. It was, she thought that she was basically invincible. And then it was all taken from her just in that, like, the guarantee. Yes, the guarantee that she had in life was never a guarantee.
When she has the date over and then Christina makes a drink and goes behind the bar and gets the vodka and pours it in the glass. This little girl making mom and dad's or mom and boyfriend's drinks. Pretty shocking scene.
Why do you have kids? Like, why else do you have kids? I don't understand what your problem is with that.
Okay, Joan.
Don't fuck with me.
Robbie Crawford. That's what I'm going to call you. That's why you have kids, to mix cocktails.
It Jesus, rolls off the Mark. Tongue. I like that.
Oh God! So we have the scene with the Pepsi guy when she marries the CEO of Pepsi, and then she ends up taking over. She's on the board, and of course, all these male personalities, all these older white males, they're going to get rid of Joan. Like, you know, she doesn't serve a purpose because, you know, it's a woman. And so when she realizes that they're testing her. And she's like, oh, no. I really did love her character in that scene. Don't fuck with me, fellas.
Yep. That was the only, I think, redeeming quality in her was that she, you know, she even says it herself, but she was not to be fucked with. You know, whatever she had her mind set to, that's what she was going to do. And it was... again, in the really worst way possible, it was a really good stance on, like, basically just a strong woman in a male-dominated world. And it's not easy to say, but, like, I applauded her in that scene, in that moment, because it was all at that time, that traditional household husbands work, and I'm assuming they're all, you know, it's a good boys club and cigars mm-hmm. and drinks mm-hmm. and everything, and they go home yep. and dinner's ready and their wife has everything ready and cleaned and whatnot. It was still so nice to see this boardroom of men get their fucking shit handed to them on a plate. All of them felt that scolded. This is not a regular woman that we're all accustomed to. This is not a housewife. This is a businesswoman. And those were few and far in between, I feel, especially personality-wise in Hollywood. There was a lot of women that were very submissive and were willing to do whatever they needed to do to get ahead in life in that industry. But she wasn't going to... There's a lot of, like, terrible metaphors that I want to say. Like, I was going to say, like, lay down and take it. But, like, she wasn't going to be submissive. She wasn't going to rely on sexual favors or flirting or whatever it was. She was demanding it. She banged her fist. She yelled at the top of her voice. She fucking was shaking when she was, don't fuck with me, fellas. Will go down in history as one of the most, I think, iconic scenes in that
Oh,
film.
Yeah. I love that scene. And I think that she probably, in real life, probably went in there knowing what they were going to try to do. She'd already played that scenario out and said, well, if they do this, this is what's going to happen. And she already knew her options. And if these fucking white old motherfuckers, males, are going to try to force me out of this board, they can forget it.
Mm-hmm.
She definitely knew her power. She's a strong personality, and I think that's one of the reasons so many drag queens always pay respect to Joan Crawford, because of her personality. She was a very over-the-top, strong, powerful woman.
Yes.
Love her, hate her. She was abusive to her daughter, but she was a very, very strong, stubborn woman. God bless her.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, again, it's. I wouldn't say she's a role model by any means, but she is somebody that you would want to embrace that personality type, or maybe that passion. Mm-hmm. You could use that for so much, and especially underground, and making sure the world knows that you are a force to be reckoned with.
Sure.
Although she used her fucking X-Men power for bad most of the time, she still had this presence, and people knew it. People really fucking knew it. And so I bet, we talked before, when she was fired in that room, when I could only imagine what was going through his mind, knowing that he had to fire her and he was going to have to deliver that news. Because I would be like, oh, Jesus Christ, please, anybody fire her but me. Like, who's going to be the one that's going to draw the short straw out of this and is going to be tasked with the duty of saying to her face, we're not moving forward with having you with our company anymore. I could only imagine that I would be sweating bricks. There's no fucking way. I'd be terrified.
I love this movie. And I love Faye Dunaway and what she did with the part of Joan Crawford. We get to a point as the movie progresses where Christina is now an adult. She's an actress. She's on a soap opera. But unfortunately, she gets sick. And then she finds out that her mother has stepped in to play her character on the soap opera, even the major difference in age. And I remember the first time I saw this movie, Robbie, I'm like, did that shit really happen? Like, oh my God, that's so bizarre.
And awkward as fuck. Like, it didn't, that's terrible. It's terrible.
Well, at this point now, you have that Diana Scarwid, who is playing the adult Christina Crawford. And I remember her reaction, you know, being in the hospital and seeing her mom play the part. And she just can't believe it. Like, this woman will never fucking stop.
I feel like it was she woke up, right, out of sleep.
I can't remember exactly. But.
And then saw on the TV that... her mom, like, that's like waking up, be like, this is a fucking nightmare. Like, I gotta wake up now. Like,
yeah.
This cannot be real.
And so again, more reason for me to read the book to see if that really did happen and what soap opera that was that Christina was working on and Joan took over while Christina was absent to get better from her sickness. You know, we cannot talk about this movie and not bring up the most iconic scene, which is when Joan goes into the closet and finds that Christine has put one of her dresses on a wire hanger and wakes Christina up and starts fucking going insane with the powdered bleach in the bathroom. And how dare you put these nice items that I bought for you on a wire hanger? No wire hangers. And it's, you know, it's referenced in pop media, and I'm sure it's been on Family Guy, maybe even The Simpsons. Everybody kind of knows that scene, and even friends of mine that are not big movie buffs, they know that scene, no more wire hangers, and they know it's a reference to, you know, Joan Crawford, Mommy Dearest, and whipping the shit out of Christina with the wire hanger. One part of that scene that makes me laugh that seems to be overlooked is when her little brother comes in and there's powdered bleach all over. It's in Christina's hair. It's all over the floor. And, you know, she has to clean up and clean the bathroom, and he tries to come and help. And she tells him to go strap himself back in. Because remember, he was in the bed in this harness. I don't know if he slept, walked, or what the whole backstory to that was. But she's like, no, go strap yourself back in, which was such an odd line that she's telling her little brother.
That's how I grew up. So I don't think that's odd at all. I was always strapped into my bed.
So were you in a bed or a sling? I was always in a sling.
Oh, okay. Yep. So it was a sling. I remember. So it was hanging from the ceiling. Yeah, beds don't hang from the ceiling. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, it was always in the back of the church and Father Johnson.
You are fucking terrible, and it's so true. It's very true. I get it.
Just kidding. It was the confessional, and I was a naughty boy.
God, that's fucking terrible.
Yes, it but is.
I that's really a really good point. I don't think it even determines what's going on exactly with the boy.
The kid, and yeah.
With sleepwalking or... I have no idea, but I think that's the first time that you knew what you were going to be in for. Like, you knew the type of woman that Joan Crawford was and what Christina was going to have to go through. You just didn't know how this would continue on. You're not going to be surprised by anything anymore. You kind of knew who was the dominant one and who was the submissive one. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot, that scene. And then what did she say when Joan walks out and leaves her like covered in like the Ajax, whatever it was?
Jesus Christ.
That's what it is. Yep. Jesus yeah. Christ. And she's like yeah. wanting to cry, and she just.
Yeah, she's exhausted. God.
Fuck, man. I felt for her. I really felt for her. She couldn't have said it any better. Like a child yeah. to basically say, Jesus Christ.
Well, and the way she said it, there was such exhaustion, like, Jesus Christ. Like, how long is this going to go on? She's at the end of her rope, and she's 8 years old.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why you're kind of like, oh, my God, you poor thing. Like, she knew. She was like, I should have been adopted by anybody else. Like, this is my life now, kind of
thing. yeah this is it. This is the roller coaster that I've been given. I thought I had this blessing by getting adopted by this wonderful movie actress that I'm going to have this perfect life, like, you know, Madonna offers all her kids. Nope. no, you picked the wrong one. Sorry.
Like, she had a choice.
Right. Well, sorry. The lotto came up and sorry. Your number's pulled, but. So, Robbie, we have to talk about the essential scene in the movie where Joan Crawford ends up dying. And then we have, like, the reading of the will. We cannot proceed without talking about that scene.
I don't know what. This is just, you know, my point of view. I really would have expected it. And I don't know why I would even bother showing up. I would have just been like, you know what? I'm not everything. I'm not going to get anything. Cause she is a fucking psychopath. She is sadistic. She's malicious. And basically I would have expected for her to say like, well, Christina, your mom had it in her will for it to have you arrested for and put in jail for the rest of your life. Like, that's basically, that was what I would have went into that expecting. So anything from there would have been great.
The only reason I would disagree with you on that is I think that Joan calmed down once she lost control of Christina, because Christina became an adult and self-supporting. And so their relationship seemed to get a little better as Christina became an adult. And they showed you little clips kind of towards that end as Christina is an adult, nothing like when she was a kid. So it seemed like maybe they finally worked things out.
That there was hope for reconciliation.
Nope. Nope.
Not at all.
And I think that's the only reason that Christine would have actually gone to the reading of the will. If she thought there was still that much contempt from her mother, who just had to be this overbearing, over-controlling super bitch, that she wouldn't have gone. But she's
super thinking, well, bitch is pretty great, yeah.
You know, but she's like, well, you know, maybe we don't see eye to eye all the time, but at least we can get together and have dinner. So things aren't so bad. And, you know, bygones be bygones. Let's go see what I'm going to get. And you're not getting jack shit. Sorry.
Bygones be bygones. My ass. I would have. No, I'd be like, remember that time you ruined, I don't know, the first. How old is she, do you think? The, you know, and then divide that by 2 years of my life. There's no fucking way. Like, I already have minor trauma from my childhood, and I'm working through that shit, and it was nowhere even near that. But still, I don't know. I just would have went in thinking, I don't expect anything, and of course, I didn't get anything. So, you know, not really time for me to be disappointed, because I was expecting that.
You know, we'll have to watch this the next time that that you and Kurt, myself, when we get back together, whether it be there or here, we're going to have to sit down and watch this. Has Kurt watched this?
I made him watch it. I did make him watch it. Yes. We watched it together. And this was shit. Like, it was last year. Sometimes the last time we watched it, I watched it a handful of times now, but it's and I try to convince people to watch it. And I feel like there's like certain gays out there that are, it's an old movie. So no, I'm going to stick to my pop culture Fire Island shit, which I haven't seen yet. I shouldn't judge. But anyways, all of these like newer gay films, but I feel like there's still, you have to pay homage to some of the,
I agree. You see
these references and you're like, I wonder where that's from. Or, well, I don't know why everybody's laughing. And you're like, you don't know where that's from.
And that's what I'm saying. Like earlier when I was talking about RuPaul, even if you're a younger gay and you're watching RuPaul's Drag Race, the newest season, and he's making jokes about, I'm not mad at you, I'm mad at the dirt. He's making reference to Mommy Dearest. And if you're educated, if you know, you'll connect the dots. And when you're watching RuPaul's Drag Race, you might be the only one in the room that busts up laughing because you're educated.
I'm normally that one. And then I feel like a fucking idiot. Because
no.
Everybody else is like, and then you're like, oh, there's this movie. And people are like, nah, we're turned off already. No. Stop talking.
It's not a TikTok. My attention span's 10 seconds. Sorry.
Oh my God. I really appreciate you saying that, but God, Kurt's going to murder me for this. He loves TikTok and I don't like it. I don't get it. I just not a big fan of it, but I am very much the person that I just had. Do you know Tyler, right? So we had him over to watch Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, because he had
okay. So love it.
Yes. So we watched that, and then we watched that because previously I wanted Kurt to watch. They had an Alfred Hitchcock thing on like Netflix or Hulu or some shit, and they had all of his films. So we watched. Oh my God!
North by Northwest.
No, it was
Rear Window.
No, oh, I love Rear Window.
Vertigo.
Oh God, that's a good one too. No,
Psycho.
Yes. Oh my God. Thank you.
So, you have failed me for the last time.
So, because I was talking about, we were talking about Jamie Lee Curtis, and I said about her mom, and she said something about her mom, and I was like, "Yeah, that's the original. That's the original Scream Queen." Like, she, you know, Psycho.
Yes.
So
yes,
we were on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. Came across it, and we started watching it, and it's just so fucking good. And I even told him about us talking about it in the podcast, and the scene where you hear the mother's voice, or you hear Norman. Well, you hear his mom, aka Norman. And you hear him say, "Oh, you're gonna hide me in the cellar,
the fruit cellar,
fruity." Yes. And I told him, and I was like, "That is basically a stab at the mother knowing she knew he was different. She knew that, and that personality. Like at the very end, when the sheriff's talking and he's explaining everything about her sister and being dead and all of that shit, and about Norman, and basically saying." He was fucked up. Like, and then at one point they even say like, "Oh, so he's a transvestite or transsexual or something." And I love how the sheriff was even saying, or the police officer was saying, he's his mom. He's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Norman doesn't exist anymore. His mom exists in him and she's taking control. And then of course it goes to the point where he's sitting there in the chair and he's like staring at the camera. So
and he wouldn't
good.
I won't even hurt a fly. That's what he said. Is he said,
"Yes,
they'll watch me and they'll know I wouldn't even hurt a fly."
It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Even though he's Norman, you know, he has this personality. It's like they'll never believe that I did it. I won't even hurt a fly.
And his mom is the psycho.
Mm-hmm.
His mom is a psycho. Norman was a submissive, very overshadowed personality. His personality didn't stand up to his mom. So his mom's personality took control easily.
Right. Yeah.
And he had no control. It was literally almost a possession. That's basically what it was. But anyway, so fucking good. Jam it. So I was going to tell you about that. I didn't even tell you. But yeah, we had a little movie marathon. But they had a... And then we watched Birds and... So fucking funny. Some of that shit was goddamn hilarious. And she liked the scene where she locks herself in the or not locks herself in a room, but she falls against the door and the birds are pecking at her. And I'm like, get your fucking ass away from that goddamn door and stop being dramatic. So you can get your ass rescued.
You look at a lot of those older movies, and because they are overplayed a little bit too much drama. They are so much fun to watch, and that's why I love The Bad Seed, Robbie, is because it's just so overplayed. I can sit there and I can like have a cocktail and watch that movie and just laugh and just have the greatest time. That's another
watch movie. That.
If we get together again, whether it be there or here, we've got to watch The Bad Seed because I love those characters.
God, yeah, that way it was so good, and it's good to see that kind of stuff. Just for it gives you reference, it gives you
absolutely
it exposes you to, for one, early cinema. It's just so people's ideas nowadays would not exist if it were not for these older films that literally established these genres or this style or this type of filming or these characters. So on and so forth. It's you have to pay respects to it. And so unfortunately, kind of going back, tying that into this long-winded story I just said, a lot of gays that don't want to bother with these older films. They're older films, I get it, but at the same time, you don't even know what you're fucking missing out on. Like they're so good for very good reasons too. It's not like I'm going to have you watch this movie that is a no talkie movie and you're reading the captioning on the screen in between these intermissions and you gotta, it's not that, which those are still great as well, but it's just these classics, these cult classics that you are denying yourself if you don't watch them.
But a lot of people are not going to be fans of film like you are. I mean, you're definitely different, Robbie, because you have a greater appreciation of film than most people. And that's why I love having you on the podcast when we talk about these things, because I can have a real conversation with you. But for a lot of people, they'd get on there and be like, "Oh my God, the birth, what is that? Oh my God. Fico, oh, whatever. It's black and white. Oh my God.
Why are you watching poor? I don't get it.
Oh, sick. Where's Lady Gaga? Where's Beyonce?
but for those of you out there that are like that, that's fine. That is fine.
Watch your TikTok.
God, shush. Kurt, I'm just kidding. I love you to death. Love you, babe. But at the same time, even Kurt watches stuff and he's like, holy shit, that was great. Or, that's where that comes from, or a reference or something along those lines. And it makes sense. And also, it's not like they were filming with a potato and had no idea what they were doing back, like in the older days, 30s, 40s, whenever you were born. So the people still had these good scripts and these good ideas, and they're out there. You really got to watch them. And I think after watching them, you really like Rear Window, like you said, yeah. Fuck, man, so goddamn good. And for somebody that's nosy like me, I learned my lesson when I was young when I watched it. Always keep a camera close by in case you have to blind someone to stop from murdering you.
Yes, good advice. The final thing I got to say about Mommy Dearest is the scene where she gets married to the CEO of Pepsi. She's wearing this pink jacket that she's wearing as she's cutting the cake. And that's the jacket that is part of my collection. It's in the corner of my bedroom on this cool mannequin. And so I'm going to put together a little video to tie into today's podcast episode talking about Mommy Dearest. So look for that on our social media.
Please do, you guys. It is, and please watch it. Really, give yourself a chance. Give it a chance. It is fucking bonkers. Like, there's not a lot of films like that these days. Like, it's... of course, I feel like there are films that I get pretty close with, you know, it sounds terrible, but child abuse and seeing what parents that are unstable or people that are unstable subject these children to. But it's just fucking wild. It's wild, you guys. Yeah, give it a chance. Honestly, you won't be disappointed. I fucking promise.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, on that note, I'm going to be ending this podcast episode with the same thing that I tell you every week. And that is, no more wire hangers!
Ever!
I don't say that every week, but I'm going to say the same thing I do say every week, which is, be good, and if you can't be good to edit. And if you're sitting in prison, especially that new shitty one by the airport in Utah, you're probably not good at it.
Calm down, Florida man. Stick to your own state.
Gay
now, right?
Florida man. Robbie.
Oh, my bad, sorry.
Robbie, get me the axe.
Jesus Christ.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.